The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Christian Moroy, co-founder and CTO at Edge Health.
But yeah, man, it's great to have you on the show, and you know, there's a lot I want to kind of try and cover with you, and I definitely don't got enough time to cover everything, but I wish we did. You know, I obviously want to go into and talk about Edge Healthcare at some point, because what you guys are doing is really fascinating. But before we do that, something that I was thinking about before the show, and actually you brought it up just then, was about this kind of space that you're occupying at the moment in AI. And you mentioned, you know, what does good look like? One, how difficult have you been trying to find that to kind of explain? And, you know, how are you kind of justifying that when, you know, you're, you know, connecting with people, clients, etc., about the projects and about AI?
I think that's a great question. So I guess the way to answer that might be if I give you a little bit of a background of how we ended up where we are. So we used to be – so Edge Health is a relatively small startup, and it was started by three of us who used to work in healthcare consulting. And we did quite technical healthcare consulting. So we all have kind of economics and statistics backgrounds, and the kind of questions that we were faced with are – We're often the same kind of questions. You know, how many beds do we have? How many beds do we need? How do we schedule our theaters? How many cases do we have? How often have we, you know, breached certain targets? If we want to build a new building, how many, you know, staff do we need for that? How many patients will arrive? How long will they stay? Can we model what happens if we make certain changes? So a lot of technical administrative questions. And what we found was that as a consultant, whenever you answer these questions, it's almost already too late. So you answer the question and then you make a nice slide pack, and then you're basically already too late because, you know, hospitals move very quickly and decisions are being made on the ground. So by the time you've done all the analysis, it's, you know, the data is almost out of date. So what we found is that the way to circumvent this, or the way to be really helpful, is if you can actually get some of the analysis as a data product onto the hospital site itself to, you know, be interactive, allow the, you know, the staff, the admin staff, but also the consultant, whoever needs to make decisions on the ground, to access the analysis, rerun it in real time with the latest data. Yeah, so this coincided with kind of the AI and machine learning boom. So it became possible to run relatively sophisticated predictive algorithms on, you know, relatively standard computers. And what we found is that, you know, predicting things like, you know, how many beds will we have, or how many patients will arrive, or how long will these patients stay, or how long will an operation take? These kind of predictive questions allow the hospital to use its resources much more efficiently. So what we're trying now is to build our data products with some of this predictive capability and plant it directly into the hospital system. So, you know, the administrative staff has some heavier guns than they usually have to tackle some of the decisions they have to make on an everyday basis. Just to answer your first question, kind of, you know, what does good look like in this field? And this is a, you know, really tricky to answer question. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Lord's AI report that just came out, but this is exactly what they have said. It's that one of the biggest problem, you know, besides lack of data or staff shortages in AI at the moment, is that people don't really know what to look for. What does look good look like? What is it that they want or need? And I think, yeah, for us, one of the big kind of, you know, challenges or you know, tasks is to, you know, make people familiar with these kind of ideas, to say, you know, you can predict how long your operations will take ahead of time, and then you can schedule these operations in more efficiently. And that is both sensible and possible, and, you know, just inform people a little bit about what is it that it's possible now And that's a big part of our work.
Interesting. So the still to stay on the good thing as well, is it something that you either have difficulty with or something that you get asked a lot about with regards to clients? I know that like when we spoke, you was sort of like it was this perfect kind of place at the time to be in this space because you were kind of taking on more of the kind of administrative headaches. But you know, is it still something that you do get asked about and you find having to kind of validate and answer questions around the good thing, or is it not as much maybe?
So I think what's really interesting at the moment is that on the clinical side, you have a lot of, you know, AI machine learning research, a lot of power. So diagnosis related things. So people are familiar with, you know, the kind of trying to build apps to diagnose skin cancer or these kind of things. So there's a lot of research and money flowing into the diagnostic side of things. But if you think about how a hospital works, you know, surgeons are extremely well-trained. They have a lot of great resources at hand. They are very good at what they do. The diagnostic side of things is not necessarily where hospitals struggle the most. If you think the administrative side, you know, people using paper records, fax machines. I mean, the NHS is still the biggest purchaser of fax machines in the world. I mean, you look at how the administrative side works and you just see a lot less, you know, resources, a lot less support, a lot less training, a lot less money flowing into there. So I think we thought that these kind of problems are where, you know, the most help is required, if you will. And you do require a little bit of kind of, you need to sort of need to know a little bit more about the particular circumstance of the particular hospital that you're in. So it might be harder to say, you know, we've already solved cancer or whatever, you know, we've already solved, you know, skin cancer recognition with this app, because a different hospital might have a different kind of administrative question. So you might have to adjust each time you go into a new hospital a little bit. But we find that that's worth it because that's, you know, where a lot of resources are badly needed at the moment, especially because the system is so underfunded and struggling.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, the problem in itself, was it just a kind of a something that you sought out? Was it actually something that you really appreciate the bigger picture and how this might, you know, economically be viable? What was the kind of initial process there with actually figuring out what problem to solve? Because you seem to come across as someone who's, you know, passionate and likes working towards, you know, problems that are going to have, you know, some real substance to them if you were to solve them. So was that similar kind of thought process the same when you were looking to work on Edge Health?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it was interest mostly that was driving this. I think I was really interested in, you know, AI and machine learning. I did some online courses. I learned a little bit about, you know, what is possible now. I don't come from a classical kind of programming background, but I kind of learned more and more programming as I went along. So I got more and more interested in this kind of area and started, you know, wanting to build data products and, you know, try to integrate some of this learning into the work. And I think this fused really well with my colleagues who had very deep experience and domain knowledge because they have been working in the sector for so long. And I think this just created a really nice synergy where we said, all right, we have some domain knowledge. We now have some, new ideas about how we can combine data products and AI within hospitals, and we just, you know, we go for it.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I think it's great. I think you tend to see that a lot. People who like, have a legitimate passion seem to be the most kind of resourceful and most successful in a lot of things. So I'm sure that'll eventually be the same way for you guys.
I think if you need to be kind of, every work comes with, you know, the things that you have to do and the things that you want to do. And if you really enjoy the things that you want to do, then you know, you're going to be better at all the other stuff as well. So if you need to kind of be into it to, you know, also like the, you know, the data work will come with all kinds of hurdles and administrative, you know, forms and data cleaning and so on and so on. So you need to be a little bit passionate to, you know, still be excited about all that stuff. And the traveling. Yeah. I mean, we don't travel that much because we're mostly based in the UK. So we don't have to kind of deal with, you know, time difference and all that. I think that's when traveling becomes really, really tricky, when you're really in different time zones all the time and stuff like that. But thank, you know, a lot of the work we do actually can be done locally. So I think that's a big plus.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think that's the case for a lot of people now, isn't it? With technology, you can typically do a lot of things from local. But, you know, you must get asked a lot still about the practicality of the AI and machine learning. You know, and is this now, you know, and how would you kind of respond if someone was to say, well, you know, what you're working on, is it really practical to be working on something like this now?
You mean practical in the sense that are we too early, or are we?
Yeah. Is this tech now? You know, I have a take on it personally. You know, I think that it's appropriate, certainly for the kind of projects that you guys are working on. But, you know, it's still a question that a lot of people are asking. Like, is it too early? Is this tech actually here now? You know, how are you kind of responding to that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of hype around AI and machine learning that I think, you know, you have to be a little bit mindful that, you know, a lot of the models that are being applied now have been around for a long time, and they're just now bearing fruit because the computers are becoming more powerful. But this partly means that we're sort of having an explosion of models all of a sudden, because there are all these models that previously weren't used and now we can use them. That doesn't necessarily mean that 5 years down the line, you know, this explosion will continue to be just more and more advanced. So for example, you know, you can now do image recognition relatively well if you have enough data, but these are still relatively narrow kind of applications of these models. So I think there is, on the one hand, there's definitely something there. There are definitely new models that weren't possible before, and they are interesting, and we have computers that can, you know, use them, and we should apply them. But we shouldn't get carried away with the hype too much, because, you know, we will not just replace all humans by machines in a couple of years and then everything will be done. We'll probably solve a few problems, and then a whole new bunch of problems will emerge that, you know, we won't be able to solve. So I think we're definitely at the right place to do something, but that something should be well scoped and well, you know, supported and not driven by hype, if that makes sense.
Well, I totally agree. I think that is what it is, managing, isn't it? And from what's going to be practical. And it seems like what you guys have kind of found, seems to me that you found kind of nice balance, because a lot of people go into healthcare wanting to try and solve, you know, surgical criteria or some of these, you know, problems that, I don't know, maybe grab more headlines attention, if you like.
Yeah, and people have been trying to struggle with this for a really long time, right? So I think, you know, something like cancer, for example, is extremely complex, and there are, you know, people have been doing cancer research for, you know, a very long time, and it's very unlikely that all these complexities will all of a sudden be, you know, resolved because we have some technology that can help us tackle them. I think as you get better technology, you'll just uncover more questions, and then you hopefully make some progress, but you're unlikely to solve, you know, all the questions immediately. So I think if you can focus on the narrow areas where the new technology was able to help you and then apply to these, I think that's the way forward. So for example, what we're trying to do is we're trying to combine, you know, our expertise with how do hospitals, you know, operate their theater schedules, for example. And then we say, well, actually, it's really, really difficult for booking managers who book theater lists to know how long operations take. They just don't know. So if we can tell them how long these operations take with a lot of accuracy, then we can turn this into a, you know, a Tetris-like problem. And computers are great at these types of problems, where we then say we have all these operations that we need to fit into the schedule. We can optimize this with computer power. But, you know, this is a narrow problem. It won't just make magically, you know, more. You know, it doesn't just magically go and make all the other problems disappear, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's true. And as you kind of continue to progress, are there things that you're discovering and problems maybe that are occurring that you probably never even considered when you started out? You know, what are some of the kind of bigger challenges that maybe were kind of unexpected when you started off on this journey?
That's an interesting question. Challenges that were unexpected. I think every time you go into a hospital, you're blown away by the amount of data they have and the number of systems they have and the, you know, lack of interoperability between them. And I think that's always a challenge. So making sure you actually have good data. So combining the different data sources, making sure that, you know, the various names match, that you actually have labels that are sensible. So I think whenever you look at, you know, machine learning or AI kind of problems, having very nicely curated data sets and having good labels on these data sets, you know, that are driven by actual deep clinical expertise, I think this is going to remain a challenge. So creating good data and giving people access to data, I think that's always a challenge.
Is there an aspect, I suppose, on the counter that you kind of enjoy the most about what you're working on?
So what I really enjoy is the kind of interplay between the technical stuff and the people stuff. So I think I really like learning new things, trying to find new model and writing some code to make it work. And so I do enjoy the technical part. But then if you don't know, you know, if you don't have any place to apply it, it can get very dry. So I think then if you also go out to a hospital and you see, you know, what does it actually look like and what are the patients like that are in the beds, and you speak to the booking manager and you learn what the booking manager struggles with every day and you try to actually bring those two together, that's a really interesting challenge, right? How do you write a code to, you know, collect data and predict some outcome, but then put that into an interface so that the booking manager can look at it, it's intuitive for them, and they can do something about what they currently do differently, continuously, hopefully, you know, forever. and kind of working on this intersection, I think, is really fun because it challenges you in different ways. It makes you sit in the dark room and code, but then it makes you get up and speak to a bunch of people and try to actually make it work on the ground. I really enjoy that.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And you must meet a lot of interesting people as well along the way. So, you know,
yeah, lots of characters in the health system. I think, you know, I mean, I think that the health system in every country is just so large that you have any kind of almost anything you can find. And I think that's interesting. You have, you know, you have economics and you have, politics and you have, you know, philosophy and you have, you know, anything from like actually making it happen on the ground to like larger questions of how should you organize it to, yeah, and you have a variety of people involved in all these layers. So I think it's inexhaustible in terms of finding interesting topics and interesting people.
No question. And do you think that, you know, are you expecting to just the momentum to build, you know, around AI and machine learning in healthcare, specifically around what you guys are doing? You know, do you think that what is your kind of assumptions over the next couple of years? You know, is the tech going to become continuously more sophisticated, or do you think that, you know, what is it that you need to be kind of conscious of, you know, over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, predicting the future is, you know, it's always a tricky thing. I think the next couple of years are going to see a lot of focus and hype. So I think there's, you know, the especially in the UK, there's now a lot of money flowing into this. Just today, the UK government announced, you know, 300 million investment in AI related research and industry. And you have various funds investing in all kinds of companies, and you have new PhDs coming up. So I think the next couple of years, there's a lot of movement into this direction. So more products are going to come out, more interest is going to come. But there's probably a risk that people will fatigue of it a bit. So I think people will focus a lot and have really high hopes, but it probably will not be able to deliver the kind of enormously high, you know, it will not, you know, we won't magically, you know, the patients are getting older, they have chronic conditions, they have, you know, there are some real questions about how you fund this, and these won't go away magically. So hopefully they'll get better with, you know, better resource utilization, but there might be a little bit of a hangover feeling in, you know, 5-10 years when the hype might have not actually made all the problems go away, and then the focus might turn somewhere else, right? I guess it's always a bit like this. You have, you know, for a decade or so, you have these movements where people focus on certain areas. So I definitely think there will be advancement, interesting things. It'll make the health system and you know, the economy hopefully more efficient. But I don't share the kind of extreme visions of, you know, you have, for example, this, I think Max Tegmark is the name, who he just wrote a book on these kind of very extreme visions of how it will completely replace, you know, so many jobs, and we'll have to completely rework the structure of how the economy operates because so many people will be unemployed. I don't see that in the kind of work that I see on the ground. So I guess I think in you know, a couple of years' time, things will probably look more similar to today than people think.
Well, I like that. And, you know, it's about solving, making complicated problems or problems that of scale or, you know, pre-existing systems more efficient and simpler, right? That's what people want, really, you know?
Yeah, and just focusing on things one step at a time, right? Just, you know, I think most things, you know, you just have to take them one step at a time. These are really hard problems, and people have grappled with them for a long time, right? You have to kind of be a bit mindful that probably, you know, just focus on one small thing and try to see, you know, oh, we have some new technology, we have some new data. There's one thing we can make better. We can schedule operations better. We can, I don't know, predict arrival patterns better and make sure that the right kind of patients are, you know, at a place in the hospital where beds can be freed up in the right kind of way. So they're very small questions I think you can answer. And then if you do that step by step, hopefully you'll get, you know, bigger change in the long run. But I think that's the approach to take. Maybe not as exciting as some of the, so I think there are potentially some things where you can make step changes, but I think those kind of things require much more power and so, for example, self-driving cars or something like this, right? So if all of a sudden you make self-driving cars feasible and cheaper than the alternative, then a lot of people at once will switch to self-driving cars, which might very quickly have a very tangible effect. But I think that will not necessarily be so extreme in kind of, you know, public services.
Interesting, right? Really interesting. I think so. I love where your kind of approach to it. Like you say, I think more people kind of lean, who are building a business out of AI and machine learning, lean towards more of maybe the extreme vision. So I really appreciate kind of where you're coming from and your kind of take and stance on it. It's something I think I probably lean more towards than some of the other examples that I've seen and listened to before.
So what do you think? What do you think on the kind of extreme scale? How strong do you think the change will be?
I think that it won't be a million miles away from maybe some of the extreme visions, but it's the time scale that I think is completely wrong.
Right. So possibly the change will be extreme, but not over, you know, a few decades, but maybe, you know, a few lifetimes instead.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is, you know, I think that
some of the, like, the, yeah, exactly. I think it's a good few generations before we see what people are assuming is going to be in the next 10 to 20 years happen. Where you're coming from is so true, because I think what people tend to forget is at the end of the day, we're still humans, you know, and we have, you know, we need certain things to operate. We are creatures of habit at the end of the day. And we're not robots, so we still long for certain things and certain habits
and meaning, right? So if you say people will not work anymore, you know, people in, you know, in at least the kind of cultural history that we're working in, work really matters a lot in terms of providing meaning in people's lives, right? So it's people will always find stuff to do, and people will continue to struggle with the same kinds of things, you know, previous generations struggled with. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we'll cope with that. I mean, maybe we'll just all play games and...
Yeah, maybe. If we get paid to do that, then I'll probably be on the poverty line because I'm rubbish at that. But the, you know, I think it's a great point. And, you know, my kind of thought is that I'm an optimist. I'm optimistic about it. And what I particularly hope, whatever does happen, is that technology does alleviate monotonous jobs and jobs where we don't have to think. And what I hope is that it gives us an opportunity, and the average person an opportunity, to work in a job where you can be creative, you can be thoughtful, you can be, you know, you can continue to, you know, increase your intelligence and capacity. And that's all based on, at the moment, a society that isn't necessarily built around that, because not everyone's is able to be given the opportunity to do that. And I just hope that if it brings anything, that's what it brings, is the opportunity for people to be able to actually just think and you know, and push the boundaries intellectually. And that's what's gonna, you know, that's what's gonna keep us innovative, is if people are actually given the chance to do so. And the more people we have who are able to work jobs where it doesn't require monotonous behavior because of technology, for me, that's a win, regardless of kind of where it goes from there.
Yeah, I think exactly true. And in our work, you see that all the time, right? I mean, consultants are super frustrated because they have 15 systems and they have to enter the same data in 15 systems. And the bookers are frustrated because they have to book a patient 5 times and then somebody removes them and they have to book them again. And they're, you know, rather than having, you know, humans be taken over by robots, it's, you know, there was a quote, I don't remember it now, but it's something like, if as long as humans can be less like robots, everybody's happy, right? If humans don't want to do robot-like things, they don't want to just monotonously enter stuff, and machines are great at doing that. So if we can, you know, do some of these, make sure the systems can, you know, predict what's going to come, enter it for you, schedule it for you, I mean, then people can focus on the kind of thing that they're best at, you know, providing care and listening and talking to people and calling the patient, telling them when their operation is and listening to them if they're afraid of it, or these kind of things, right? Then, because these things machines will not replace. So, yeah.
Exactly. Christian, it's been fascinating talking to you, mate. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on. It was interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I'll let you get going, but yeah, hopefully, as you mentioned, we can catch up in 50 years' time and do this again.
Yeah, well, then I look forward to speaking to you in
50 years.
Cheers.
Have a good day. Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.